It was fated he would fulfill this role. While still a teenager, he joined NICAP, National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, which is, as most of you know, the precursor to MUFON. He immersed himself in UFO subjects to such a degree he decided to go into broadcasting in order to do unusual stories in the paranormal genre the mainstream media just didn't want to touch. In fact, his first broadcast interview while a very young radio reporter for Detroit's WKRAM was Roswell expert and physicist Dan Friedman, with whom he has maintained a lifelong friendship.
He has done it all in radio, as well as soar to great heights in television, including positions as executive television news producer and news director. At age 28, he was the youngest major news market news director in the country while at KMSP-TV in Minneapolis. That's age 28, folks. He came to the attention of premier radio networks who heard him on his late night radio program on KTRS in St. Louis. Known as the Nighthawk, his penchant for covering paranormal topics with enthusiasm and skill impressed premier executives. He was brought on board to host a Sunday night coast-to-coast show, and the rest is history.
And on a personal note, I want to add that it was KTRS's The Nighthawk was one of the very first radio shows that I guested on after entering the field in July of 1996. And from the get-go, he recognized the political implications of the UFO-ET issue and was supportive of the work of PRG. As most of you know, it's not the only difficult political issue he has taken on, but from where I sit, it's still the most important. He has had virtually every researcher, activist in the emerging field of exopolitics as guests on Coast to Coast. Alfred Weber, Michael Sala, Danny Sheehan, Paul Hellyer, Victor Vigiani, Stephen Greer, Grant Cameron, Paula Harris, Francis Barwood, and on and on and on. I don't know of any that haven't done it. All of them belong with many of the key witnesses, and that's really important, the key witnesses who have come forward. No program has done more to keep the issues and the implications of the disclosure process before the American people than Coast to Coast AM. While the top-tier mainstream programs continue to be part of the coalition of the withholding, this show shined on.
And now, if you could just be patient with us for just a moment, I'm sensing that our speaker has just entered the building.
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for three-time Emmy Award winner, Mr. George Norrie.
No expenses. I don't know how to drive around Washington, D.C. at all. That's right, who does? So I said, Steve, just get me a limo. Pick me up at the airport. Something to make it easy on me and producer Tom. No problem for Steve Bassett. So we got off the plane, waited in baggage claim, and waited, and waited. I couldn't find the limo guy. So I said, Tom, we've got things to do. We've got to get to the hotel. We've got conferences and meetings. What are we going to do? He said, George, let's just take the bus. Take the bus? All right, we took the first bus that came by. It was a senior citizen's bus. Tom and I were lucky to get the first two seats up near the bus driver. Told him where we were going, and he says, well, we really don't get that close, but I'll get you as close as I can. And off we went. I love senior citizens. I'm going to be one very soon. They were 80s, 90 years old. While we're on the bus, a 90-year-old woman kept coming up to the bus driver with a handful of peanuts, giving the bus driver these peanuts to eat. And he would eat them, and she'd go back. She'd come back with a handful of peanuts, give it to the bus driver, he'd eat them, and she'd go back. I'm looking at Tom going, what is this? Well, after about the fourth time, the bus driver finally said to the little old lady, Miss, what are you doing this for? She says, well, we just want you to have our peanuts. And he said, well, why aren't you eating them? She said, well, we can't. We don't have any teeth. We just like to suck the chocolate off them. That's how my day started. Steve had asked me to do a little formal presentation before we get into our Q&A, and we'll do that. Questions, a little meet and greet. As you know, Coast to Coast is now, and I'm very proud to say this, we are now on 521 radio stations in North America. Thanks to all of you, and FM, and of course, Streamlink as well. And as you know, we've had this opportunity, as Steve and Cheryl said in the introduction, to interview all kinds of incredible guests that have run the gamut from everything that you can imagine. And now, of course, this being this X conference and the study of UFOs and disclosure, I've been fortunate to talk to some incredible guests, some of whom are probably here right now. Just by a show of hands, how many Coast to Coast guests do we have right here? Look at this. Look at it. My God, if anything happened to this, the whole show would be gone. And as you know, the guest segment on Coast to Coast is 3 hours long. And I have 10 clips to share with you tonight. So 10 times 3 hours is 30 hours. I'll be back tomorrow at about 8 at night. I'll see you while you listen. I had an opportunity years ago when he wrote Way of the Explorer to talk to Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell. Absolutely riveting. He told me that we've been visited, that he's been told we've been visited, and I believe him. But it wasn't until last year that when he went to Britain and appeared on a British radio show, that the same things that he had been saying on Coast to Coast were picked up by the Europeans. And things just went crazy. I want to play this very brief clip of Edgar Mitchell. Here we are.
There are millions and billions of galaxies and planets and galaxy clusters, star systems. The idea that we're alone in the universe is, once we now start to understand a little bit about it, is utterly absurd. We're not the youngest by any means, probably, nor certainly are we the oldest civilization around. There have got to be billions of them out there. It's just a long ways out there, and we've only gone a few miles off our own planet, not to mention outside of our solar system, which we will have the science and technology to do if we pursue it, I believe, by the end of the century we're in, provided we don't blow ourselves up with stupidities in the process.
Oh, that's so true, Edgar, so true indeed. Do you recall the case in the 1960s of Barney and Betty Hill, the abduction case?
I read that case, yes. I'm aware of it. I have not read about it in many years now, but yes, I'm aware of that and was aware of it when I was looking into these things quite a few years ago.
When you were a youngster growing up, were you interested in this entire field of consciousness and the possibility of extraterrestrial life out there?
Well, since I grew up in Roswell, or in the vicinity of Roswell, Mexico, it was hard to escape it. But however, the so-called Roswell incident did not take place until 1947, and I was a senior in high school at that point. As a matter of fact, in 1947, I was a senior in high school, and the ranch where presumably this all occurred, my grandfather was a cattleman and traded cattle, and we knew the ranchers in that area.
Now, tomorrow at 9 o'clock, Edgar will be speaking. Who wouldn't believe this guy? Now, you talk about credibility. You talk about trying to get to the bottom, to the truth of disclosure. There we have it, folks. I think one of the top people for this world to sit back and say, what the heck is going on? To me, and I've said this before, if Edgar Mitchell says it's true, I would take it to the bank. If there are any banks still open. How many of you know the name James Fox? Heard of James? Some of you, not all of you. He was born in England, came to this country, put together a documentary called UFOs, 50 Years of Denial, and then his career just took off. Now, I've had the opportunity to interview James several times on Coast to Coast and also to appear on the Larry King Show with him. Listen to what he says about UFOs and disclosure.
Speaking of film footage, you remember when we were on Larry King with Buzz Aldrin?
Yes.
He was talking about that sighting. Well, a couple of months ago, I put out a statement to anybody, any military or government officials with sort of experienced unambiguous UFO cases to, you know, get in touch with us for continue the progression of the film. And I get a 16mm film roll sent to me. It was taken on Apollo 11. It's a copy of whatever was taken. And I take it in, and of course I have it transferred digitally. And it shows, now there's no audio, but it's clearly Apollo 11. And I talked to Buzz about this, I think in 1999 or 2000 when I was supposed to meet with him in the south of France. It clearly shows for about 4 seconds what appears to me to be a disc, a saucer-shaped disc. And I don't know if they're leaving the moon or if they're, you know, coming or going, but it's out the window of the capsule, and it was shot by Buzz Aldrin. Very interesting, right? Because I remember him telling me, confirming this story for me quite some time ago.
Another issue, another compelling story of the existence of UFOs. You know, all of us are here because we believe, or we want to believe, or there's something happening in our lives that seems to be drawing us to this. I mean, Steve Bassett, for an example. I've known Steve, as he was saying, since 1997. Have you ever seen a person more driven with trying to get to the bottom of what this is? And I think most of you have that same gut feeling, or you wouldn't be here today. We need to find out what's going on and why it is happening, because it is the basis for who we are as well. We're looking for answers. You know, I can paraphrase that quote from one of my favorite movies, Contact, where the alien was talking to Jodie Foster, saying that we are subject as humans to having such beautiful dreams and horrible nightmares. And until we can get the right answers of who we are and what we are, we're going to be plagued with this inner feeling that you all have. But how many of you have that emptiness inside of you? I do. I do all the time. And I know most of you probably do too. I want answers. And this is one way of us trying to find out how to get it. Nick Redfern has been a regular guest on Coast to Coast. Born in Britain, he's a ufologist and a darn good one, very active in official disclosure. I had an opportunity to talk with him constantly on Coast to Coast, and this is just a clip of what he has to say.
Why do you think the great UFO cases were old ones? What's happening? How come we're not getting great new ones?
Well, you know, I think that is an interesting question. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm not able to give a definitive answer, but I mean, my own opinion would possibly be, you know, if you look at when the larger waves of UFO encounters occurred in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, you know, one theory that's been postulated is that this is some sort of first wave of visitations, if you like, or the most recent wave, and perhaps the, you know, the level that they're coming here now has been reduced, or potentially, you know, I think it also could be that the military has a greater handle on the situation, to where perhaps we simply don't get to hear about the reports because the secrecy surrounding the subject has been clamped down at a far greater level, and the military's really in control, where in the 40s and 50s, you know, there are quite clear indications that the military was quite panicky about the fact that these weird things were going on in our airspaces and stories were getting out to the newspapers and the magazines. It may just be, you know, from our perspective, it's unfortunate, but they may just be far better at hiding these cases, perhaps.
So many people who are fascinated with the UFO subject matter are just waiting, biting their nails, hoping that there'll be government disclosure on this eventually. Do you see that coming, Nick?
You know, I think, I hate to say this, but I think if there's going to be disclosure, it's because there's going to be a need for disclosure, you know, in the event some sort of tremendous event or encounter will occur to the point where it'll be unable to be denied. Unfortunately, I don't see, unless that happens, I don't see what advantage there is to, you know, President Bush or Tony Blair or somebody standing up and saying, hey guys, we lied for the last 60 years. You know, I think it's going to take either an open landing of some sort or a reason why they need to come clean because, you know, such a remarkable event's occurred. I think it's going to be something like that that's going to require government agencies to come forward.
I think Nick is absolutely right. Sorry, George. I think disclosure, and this is where I differ from Steve. Steve believes disclosure is going to happen soon with this administration. I don't think this administration even knows, truly understands the UFO situation, because I think those above this administration, those above government, as Nick Redfern has said, are holding it back. I don't know why they don't want us to know. I can't figure that out yet. I come up with 1,000 possible reasons, but I truly believe that they want to hold this back as much as they can. There's a fellow in Denver who's going to be on tomorrow, Jeff Peckham. Jeff has been trying to get a ballot initiative in Denver, basically opening up a UFO organization there. It's not successful. As a matter of fact, I think that it was passed on in the first go-round. I want you to hear a little bit of Jeff Peckham, and you'll hear more about him tomorrow.
Now, this is a fascinating proposal here. Tell me, how did it all come about?
Well, it came about as a result of hearing a former NASA expert disclosing a lot of declassified government documents, which prove that, yes, there is a cover-up of extraterrestrial evidence and UFO evidence. That was what really prompted me to take this action. But I had already seen some very credible evidence, videotape footage of extraterrestrials in a Colorado ET encounter case that has very, very credible documented evidence, probably better than just about anything else. And that's going to be released more publicly in the next 2 to 8 weeks. But I saw that before in a smaller group meeting. And so I saw the evidence was there, and this gentleman from NASA concluded that he would, after the very inspiring, very insightful talk, he said, I don't think I'm going to see our government disclose this information in my lifetime. And I immediately thought, wait a minute, we are the government, and a ballot initiative gives the people the power to achieve things like this, especially at a local level. So that's how it came about.
Okay, now tell me how you're going to get the city fathers to accept this. What are you doing there?
Well, they would have to. If we get the 4,000 signatures, we submit that to the city. It goes through a couple of city council meetings, really just for review and to allow them to adopt the ordinance themselves. If they don't adopt the ordinance, it goes right onto the ballot. They have no choice in the matter. And then the people vote on it in November.
Okay,
and it goes into law.
All right. Once it becomes, let's assume it becomes law, Jeffrey, then what happens? What will they create with this commission?
The commission will be selected. 11 commission members will be selected, appointed by the mayor. Then they have certain responsibilities, such as gathering available evidence about extraterrestrial visits to Earth and their existence in general, providing that to anybody who wants it in Denver, but especially city government, the public, having exhibits at museums about extraterrestrial cultures, just generally bringing the issue right out in the open to the public.
And he's darn serious about this. He'll update you tomorrow on just how he's doing. But as of right now, it doesn't look like the city of Denver wants to get this thing passed. A lot of Jeff's information came about with a video that he was able to see and witness by Stan Romanek, who was on our show, who claimed that a little alien was peering in on his daughter's bedroom window. And he had a picture of this, which we've had posted on coasttocoastam.com, and I'm sure you've seen some of this on YouTube and the internet. Well, Stan agreed to take a polygraph test at our insistence, and we hired a well-known polygraph examiner out of the Denver area, and sure enough, Stan took the test on his own and did not pass several questions that the polygraph examiner asked him. Stan claims that he was under medication and that that affected the outcome. Polygraph examiner stands by his report, and that's where that is at this point. You know, I get asked a lot on Coast to Coast, who are your favorite guests? I like them all. Dr. Roger Lear, here he is, one of the best. Hello, Roger. Rosemary Ellen Guiley. I like them all. Richard Hoagland. But I also like a guy by the name of Jim Mars. He originally started investigating the Kennedy assassination. Then he decided, you know what? There's something else with this alien agenda. And so he decided to investigate that. Here's a portion of an interview with Jim Mars.
As you probably are well aware, Larry King has had, what, half a dozen programs now?
Oh, yeah. He's hot for this stuff.
Huh? He's really jumping on it now, and he's got military people. And it's really funny because in the past, usually, they wouldn't give the microphone to anybody except just some Joe Blow out in the countryside. And then they'd turn to some establishment authority figure like a colonel or a general, you know, who'd say, oh, no, there's nothing to that, folks. And today, though, they had the base commander from Bentwaters over in England, understand Linda Moulton Howe has got some new information about that that she's going to be presenting. They actually talked to other military people who talked about quite seriously and candidly about their UFO encounters. So it just certainly seems to me that we're entering a new era here of enlightenment, and now it seems like it's becoming acceptable to actually put the UFO issue on the table and discuss it in public, which is, you know, something we really haven't had up until about now.
So you have people like Jim Mars starting to investigate this and pushing for it, so that's going to help with the answer. Some time ago, I was asked to be one of the speakers at an award ceremony for Dr. Roger Lear. And stand up for a second, Roger, if you would, please. There he is. And by thank you for everything you could do. And of course, my personality is kind of humorous sometimes. So while I was introducing Dr. Lear at his event, I decided, wouldn't this be novel? Because in the crowd was John Lear. So I pulled producer Tom aside and said, I'm going to pretend that I think the award is for John Lear. And I want to watch everybody's faces when I do that, especially Roger's. So I was called up to introduce the award winner, whom they truly didn't mention yet, though we all knew it was Roger, right? And I went into this spiel about how John Lear deserved this award. Now, I'm doing this in all seriousness at the podium. The audience is in shock. They're starting to whisper to each other. He's lost it. By the way, that will happen to me one day on the air. You'll know when it's over for me. And Tom, and we set it up this way, was to rush up and whisper in my ear. So while I'm talking about how John Lear deserves this award and this recognition, up comes Tommy, whispers in my ear, and I said, but I also think Dr. Roger Lear deserves this award. And there was another Lear story I told, but I won't say it tonight. But John Lear is a different story. Here's a guy who's been a pilot. He has been intricately involved in UFOs ever since he met Bob Lazar. He has witnessed flying saucers. He's an incredible individual, absolutely riveting. And we have a portion of John Lear's appearance on Coast to Coast.
John, I have always heard, for better or worse, that our government cut a deal with extraterrestrials for knowledge, for technology, and gave them the abductions, primarily because they figured they couldn't stop them anyway, so they might as well get something out of it. Have you heard anything like that?
Yeah, they cut the deal, and they got the technology, but they had no idea that they didn't have any, you know, that there was nothing they could do about it anyway. And they cut the deal saying, well, we'll only let you abduct this many. Well, of course, that the fact is, George, Earth is not so much of an experiment as a farm. They, whoever they are, if you want to call them aliens or whatever, they use this as a farm. They harvest, they manufacture souls, and we are just containers. This information comes from the yellow book that Bob read at the test site, and that's the deal. Now, whatever they have to do to keep us in line, if they have to go to the government and say, look, we want you to help us keep our secret, and what we're going to do is give you some technology, and of course, we'll limit our abductions. But, you know, that's just the story.
How many do you think they've taken from this planet, John?
Well, I used to say 1 in 10. I don't know whether it's any more or any less than that.
It's still a lot of people when you're talking you're talking about 1 in 10 on this planet,
no,
right?
Yeah, no, they're not taking them. Understand? They're just monitoring them. They take you once when you're about 3, once when you're about 7, and once when you're about 11 or 12, and then usually that's it. Now, what they do, I don't know. But that's when they just take and monitor you.
And you see the pattern that's developing here. People who are extremely credible, who are devoting their lives and careers to this issue, are coming forward and speaking like John Lear, explaining what's going on. 40 years ago, people would have had him arrested. That's not happening anymore. I mean, just by the nature of conferences like this, and they're growing by leaps and bounds, more and more people who are professional or caring, who want to get to the bottom of this, are beginning to attend conferences like this. But when you hear someone like John Lear, who's again one of many, you've got to stop and say there's got to be something to this. I truly wish that more than just Larry King and Coast to Coast and some of the great alternative media shows that you hear would also get involved in doing this in a big way. But they're not yet, but they will one day. Nick Pope spent 25 years with the British Ministry of Defense. I believe he just spoke over the last few moments today. Truly a remarkable individual to talk about what the British government knows about UFOs. Here's Nick Pope.
Last year, the British Ministry of Defense began the process of releasing all the UFO files, the vast archive of material, some of it highly classified, going back many, many years. A policy decision was made that the time had come to release this and just let the people decide. There's nothing in there that says for sure that these things are extraterrestrial. The honest answer is we don't know. We simply don't know what they are. But the Ministry of Defense has these case files, hundreds of them, going back since, you know, going back to the 50s. And the decision was made to release them. So I think that certainly attracted the interest of the mainstream media. And they said, well, hang on then. Okay, what's in these files? And when they looked in these files, and I worked with the National Archives here in the UK to pick out some cases that might be of interest. When they looked, they saw, okay, some of these are misidentifications. Yes, there are some aircraft lights, weather balloons, satellites, meteors, etc. But look, you know, when they looked deeper, they saw that there were indeed some cases where UFOs had been tracked on radar, seen by commercial airline pilots, seen by military pilots with jets being scrambled. And I think when the media saw that last year, they realized that they'd been had. The powers that be for far too long had used phrases like little green men and flying saucers to disparage this, but when they actually looked at the files, they thought, hang on a minute, there's something interesting here, serious defense and national security issues.
Hey, hello, when are people going to start waking up? There's a guy 25 years with the British government saying this. Our next clip is from Dr. Roger Lear. Come on up for a second, Roger. I'm going to have you introduce yourself. I'm going to have you introduce your own clip. I had posed a question to Roger some time ago of whether he knew where these alien implants were coming from. But he's now at a point where he believes they're coming from something very unusual, aren't you?
Absolutely. We have shown beyond the shadow of a doubt, and I make this statement officially, and I hope it goes all over the world at the press conference on Monday, that these are not from here, these are from extraterrestrial sources and perhaps outside of our solar system.
I had witnessed one of his operations that he had done several years ago with a woman who, and on radio, I have to emphasize this, had a implant in her cheek, and then I said her face cheek. Her cheek. And this thing, every time they tried to get it out, did what?
Moved.
They could not get it until hours later. They kept digging into her face cheek, and they pulled this out. It was remarkable.
That sounds a little gross, George.
You're the surgeon?
Yes, but you know what you see and what you get are two different things.
Well, that's true. So here's a clip of Dr. Roger Lear.
We just walked out to look at the sky and trying to decide which direction we're going to go to see if maybe we could see something. So again, all this activity was going, and we saw what we thought were three F-16s, two ahead and one trailing, and then there was another one on the left side. And all of a sudden, I think it was Jordan that said, oh, look at that, where the two F-16s are in front, it just blocked out that star. And I said, now, wait a minute. So I grabbed the binoculars and we looked, and this thing was a triangle. You know, I don't know how big the one Art saw was, but
that's a pretty good size.
This thing was huge. It blocked out a huge portion of the sky, and the strobing that we thought, you know, were the F-16s was a strobing light, which is in each corner of the triangle, and then to the left rear of it was an F-16 that was trailing it. But there you go. And again, staying there were three Belgian pilots, and evidently we have an exchange program going on between Belgium and the U.S. And
yes.
These guys were going to fly the following week, so when they're off base, they can stay wherever they want. So they were staying also at the little alien. And on the last day, we're getting ready to leave, I was alone with one of them in the restaurant, and they were telling him, you know, what we saw, and he just smiled at me, and he says, well, let me tell you, everything you hear about Area 51 is true.
I love it.
He's one of the best. And again, thank you, Roger, so much. Right, no, it was not a surgery. I am not an investigator. I am a facilitator. We get guests like Roger Lear, like Stephen Bassett, and we get them on the program so you can hear what's going on. That's my job. That's my role. Other investigators like Linda Moulton Howe and our next clip, Italo-American journalist Paula Harris, who will be speaking tomorrow, they are the investigators. They are the ones who do the work to try to get the answers to what's going on. Paula Harris, a remarkable guest. Here she is.
Paula, first I want to ask you and just get your brief reaction to this story about the Vatican. Now, you've been talking to the Monsignor for years now. He has echoed this all along. It was really never picked up by mainstream as much as this one has. Give me your take on the Vatican's chief astronomer simply saying now that, hey, there's no contradiction here. If there is alien life, he's not saying there is, but he said if there is, it's okay. What do you think?
Well, I think that anything that comes out in public like this, that's in any newspaper, and especially now it's even in the American newspapers, is sanctioned by the Vatican. We're coming down to the wire, Georgia, the way I look at it. There's something happening here, and something that needs preparing. In other words, I think that the big top institutions, and Vatican is the major one, is one of the major ones, is preparing us for something. And the idea that Father Fuentes is 45 years old, is a young Jesuit priest and replaced Father Coyne in 2006. Right there, I looked at the situation and thought, okay, well, there must be, like in NASA and everywhere else, a battle inside the Vatican for disclosure. And we have one younger Jesuit that probably has talked them into coming out to at least prepare the terrain. He's not saying there is extraterrestrial life, George. What he's saying is that if there is, and he made a strong statement, he said, the extraterrestrial is my brother.
Yeah.
You know, my brother.
That's pretty strong.
The existence of aliens is like, ruling out this existence is like putting limits in God's creation.
Alfred Weber was a guest yesterday here at the X Conference, said last night on Coast to Coast that he has a letter from the Vatican, which basically stated that the priest in question was acting on his own behalf, that it wasn't endorsed by the Vatican. However, Alfred and I believe that the Vatican fully knew what he was doing and kind of wanted him to start leaking this out to the world. And that too adds to the puzzle of what is going on, disclosure. When I was 21 years old, my first radio job as a reporter in Detroit, my very first assignment interview was with Stanton Friedman. I call Stanton now the father of modern day ufology. Ever since Dr. J. Allen Hynek has passed away, Stan has basically taken up that position. A remarkable man with incredible energy, visits hundreds of universities in his career, speaking engagements all around this planet, just doesn't stop trying to get to the bottom of this UFO field. Here he is, our last clip.
Really? With ufology, people want to ask the wrong question, which is, what are UFOs? Well, UFOs are all kinds of things. Well, you're not saying all UFOs are alien spacecraft, are you? Of course I'm not. I'm saying some are. That's very important. And, you know, the some that are. And so I look around at the world we live in today, and as somebody was asking, why would anybody come to this place with the mess we have here?
Especially now.
Well, yeah, I say, hey, it's to keep us from going out there.
I mean, in my day, Stan, I had to come back after I covered that with you on my own because I was just, I loved it. I loved UFOs. And I came back with the tape. I'm 21 years old, and my news director says, hey, George, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm editing this story I'm putting together about UFOs. And he said, we're not going to use that. Well, I convinced him to use it. And we got more response to that with your speech than anything they had done. And he then said, go do all the things you want to do. But you're right. The media then wasn't as interested. It was more laughable than it is today.
Well, yeah, and it's a lack of courage. You know, I keep citing to people, I had a classroom with 100 students at a college, and I said, I want to get what you think about this, not what your buddy sitting next to you thinks. So please close your eyes, vote with your hand. Your instructor and I will count the results. To make a long story short, 80% of the students, or about 100 students, thought that most people didn't think that there was anything to UFOs. But 80% of that group did think that there was something to UFOs, that some UFOs were alien spacecraft.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a big dichotomy there. People's actions, apparently, are dependent on their perception of how other people will respond. Not their own feeling about it, and if their perception is wrong, too bad. That's why only 10% of the people who admit another 10% that they have had a sighting after my lectures, only 10% of the 10% reported what they saw.
And there's the list of 10. A short list of people, many, many more have been on Coast to Coast, who continue to work full-time to trying to get the answers to the question of UFOs, do they exist? What happened to me a long time ago when I was a little boy, my mother brought home a book called We Are Not Alone, which was written by the then New York Times science writer Walter Sullivan. And I was hooked after that. I looked into the Look magazine article of Betty and Barney Hill and that abduction, and I couldn't stop. And it pushed me and it drove me to do what I'm doing today. I got into broadcasting because I wanted to get these answers. As a matter of fact, when I was a little kid, I used to build, and I've told this story in other cities, little rockets, those little model rockets when we were kids, and you'd launch them. And I used to put little frogs in these things, and they'd go up, and they'd come down with a parachute. The frog was okay, and I'd let him go, so he could tell his other frogs to keep away from that guy. And I had a great time, but what we used to do, you talk about synchronicity and how things affect us as we are kids. So I used to do this with a buddy of mine named Gary Frank, and we would build these rockets. Now Gary's role, and we must have been 13 years old, His role was to hook up the little electrodes to these little solid propellant engines in the rocket and launch them, let them go. And my role was to broadcast the launch to the neighborhood. So, you know, he's putting the little electrodes on and he's ready to launch the engine. And there I am with my little squeaky voice going, 10, 9, 8, 7, whoosh, off it goes. I, of course, go into broadcasting. Go figure. What does Gary Frank end up doing? Building the engines for the space shuttle. It's a small world. And then you talk about synchronicity. Why do things happen the way they do? One of the reasons why I continue to do Coast to Coast is because I want these answers. And during that same period, one of our other little friends, his name was Michael Kozakowski. Little Michael, his job was to go and get the rocket after it launched and float it away. I wasn't going to do it. And so these things would go up a half a mile, catch a breeze, and they were gone. Well, it was Michael's job to go and rush and catch the rocket, and he'd bring it back to us. Well, on the day of one of our launches, he was sick. He called me up and was disappointed, wanted us to cancel the launch, and I said, no, Michael, we can't. We've got a time schedule here. We've got a certain window. So Gary hooks up the rocket, I broadcast it, and the thing takes off, and there's no Michael. So we're all trying to look for this thing, and we're running, and we're chasing it, and it's blowing, and it's blowing, and it's blowing. 3 blocks, 4 blocks, 5 blocks. Finally lands. When we get to it, it's in the backyard, and who's holding it but Michael Kozakowski? It was his backyard. There are no coincidences. So now I'm going to open this up to what I call the fun portion of this. I got the formal part out of the way, which is equally important. But to talk with you about Coast to Coast and about life. Tommy has got a microphone.
Folks, just raise your hand if you have questions. We'll come on over and get to you. We'll try to get to everybody.
Let's be as candid as we can with you.
Let's go to this gentleman.
And by the way, thank you for all of you for coming, by the way, too. I really appreciate that. It's a great event. How many of you are going to the banquet later? Are you part of that? That'll be great. Absolutely. Come on, Bobby. Yes.
Sir, I just want to start off and say great job with your speech and great job with your show.
Thank you.
Secondly, this is kind of a controversial subject, but then again, we're talking about UFOs, so I guess everything is a little controversial to some people. I know Dr. Sala was speaking about these deep black budget projects that go on. $1.7 trillion were spent, he was saying. I think, I'm not sure what year he said they were spent, but he was saying during 1 year, $1.7 trillion.
And it's probably higher now.
I know for a fact, based upon many high-ranking officials that have come forward, that there have been crashes and there have been recovery of crashes. Dr. Ben Rich came forward. He was the head of Skunk Works, which was a division of Lockheed and Martin. Walter Haught, he was the press secretary. He signed a deathbed affidavit.
Roswell.
Yeah, for Roswell came forward and said he knew about the crash, he was told, and he signed an affidavit that was opened up after he died that he came forward with this information. But you know, now on to the more controversial part. There was a story that came up that I've been following, and the team that's still working on it is called Drone Team. They have a website called droneteam.org. This project, I think, came out on your show, as far as I've researched it. It was called the Carrot Project. It was written off by the head of MUFON as a hoax, and I watched that show, and I was quite disappointed for the fact that I didn't feel it was their evidence that they wrote it off was scientifically proven enough for them to say 100% this was a hoax. I mean, I looked at the documents. This guy, I'm sure you're aware with this project. Did this guy come on your show and talk about the Carrot Project?
Actually, I think he came out with Art Bell.
Art Bell.
So I'm not
okay.
familiar.
But this gentleman took high-resolution scans, and he released them about a top-secret government project that he worked into in the mid-'80s in California, and he had documents to back it up, and it was about the California drone sightings. And, you know, I just felt that it didn't get a fair shot. There still is a team working on it. I don't feel like it was actually proven to be false yet, and there's a lot of people out there under...
Can you get to them?
Excuse me?
Can you get to them in terms of getting them to get to us?
Yeah,
I'd like to
I can get drone team in touch with you. One of the people involved is an associate of mine, and I do exchange emails regularly.
Let's do that.
So maybe you know, we can get this resolved, and just based upon one photographic expert saying that he thought it was a hoax, I think there's a lot of bias in the world of science, and I think this needs to be looked at a little closer.
Good point. Okay.
We'll thank you very much.
Thank you. Sounds exciting. I'd like to see that picture. How do you like Tom's new goatee?
Don't even start.
He looks like Baron Munchausen.
George, we have a question.
Yes.
Over here, sir.
Did you see that movie, Baron Munchausen? One of the worst movies ever made.
George?
Yes.
I'd also like to thank you for all that you've done. Also,
All right. And since you're on this side of the room, that makes you west of the Rockies, I guess.
Right. I want to talk about a non-UFO issue, but I think an issue that all of us are very concerned about.
Okay.
David Wilcock was on your show on January 4th. He talked about the fact that the solar system was going to pass through the plane of the Milky Way. We're going to have all these catastrophes. Brent Miller with the Horizon Project was on a show on the 11th. He said, actually, Wilcock's cycle was 26,000 years, and Brent Miller's cycle is 11,500 years. He talked about there's going to be a pole shift, a physical pole shift, and this has been modeled by various astrophysicists. Today I talked with Alfred Weber, who said that we've already passed through the plane in 1998. It's a 33,000-year cycle, and he's not aware of any catastrophes, but there could be some kind of a psychological or some kind of something like that. Then there's other people saying, no, it's a 20,000-year cycle because the Earth is on a 6,000-year wobble, and it's just a view of the sun, the precession of the equinox. The sun will come up on December 21st, and it's going to cross the plain. So I guess the request that I think we're all concerned about, those people are saying there's going to be these major catastrophes, and you have Wilcox who's even talking about we're all going to go into another dimension, which is really kind of off the wall. So I'd like to see you maybe talk with Michelle Kaku about this and try to...
He's coming up this week.
Right, right. Now, for example, Alfred Weber says that his information is verified by the Naval Observatory. So I just like to request that you maybe try to get to the bottom of this, because I think it concerns us all.
Well, I don't know if we can get to the bottom of it, but we sure can continue to look into it and get other views as well. But I think what you just illustrated is the fact that so many guests are out there with different views. And does anybody really know what's going on? Because one person will tell us it's going to be the end to all. Another says not to worry. And, you know, it may be one of those things where we just have to wait and see. But we'll continue probing these. Tommy? Yes, sir.
Hi, George. I'm George also, by
the way.
Hello,
George.
How are you? You did the show last night from the studios of WMAL AM 630, and I listened to it. But the problem is that WMAL only carries your full 4 hours on Fridays and Saturdays now. From Sunday through Thursday, they cut the last 2 hours off and put a trucker show on, which makes me furious. And what are you going to do about it?
I don't think that's going to last. Let me tell you what's going on with that. That's a great station, by the way. And we have done very well on that station and for that station. The trucker show is owned by the company that owns that station. The chairman of the board somehow thinks that that is part of his project, and has ordered that station to carry 2 hours of the show. Keep in mind that he also ordered his stations in other markets to do it, and they told him no. This station did not, but I think they will soon enough. And it's, you know, in the beginning when I first replaced Art, I shouldn't say replaced him, but took over for him, we lost three major affiliates that came roaring back within 3 months and now remain some of our top stations in the country. So it's just a matter of time. I mean, they've already seen an erosion of the ratings since this two-hour switch, so we'll just wait it out for a little bit. I don't want to leave that station at this point. I want to give them the opportunity to come back to us. But there's always Streamlink for the other 2 hours. Go down and picket them.
Hi.
Hi.
My name's Elena. And your show...
You look like you're in the movie The Natural. There's a light hitting you in the head from the
I first want to say your show is, like, super, like, awesome.
Thank you.
Amazing. And I want to know, like, any colleagues of yours or any, like, friends of yours, like Dr. Light, do you think that if there is intelligent life out there, which I know there is, of course, but... Do you think they might be hostile or friendly if they do decide to make full-on contact, like land and say, hi, people? Do you think they'll be friendly or hostile? Or is it
I think we'll get both. I think the soup that made us is the same throughout the universe. And that means you've got good and bad. And, you know, you're going to have greed, whether they've evolved to a certain level, and... Let's just hope that when this happens, that the good ones are the ones that come forward. But I think it's very possible that they're evil as well, manipulative and controlling.
Because I was reading in a crop circle book, it's Signs of Contact, that one of the crop circles, in fact, was a yin and yang sign.
Could be. Could be. And thanks for listening.
Okay. Bye. You're welcome.
George, I have an important subject to bring to your attention. It's called Codex. It's supposed to be implemented
Absolutely.
December of 2009, where minerals and vitamins will be treated as toxins. They're going to be reduced. And the government's own, the UN's own documentation, this doctor showed, where they estimate 4 billion people will be reduced, a population reduced 4 billion. 2 billion with opportunistic diseases like cancer, and the rest to starvation. And I was wondering if someday, if you could have her as a guest on your program. She mentioned she has constitutional lawyers to prevent this from going into effect, because once you're into this program, you can't get out. And already, a lot of countries of the world are already involved in this. They can't get out. And she's trying to keep us. It was signed by President Clinton illegally. It should have been 2/3 of the votes of the Senate to implement this thing.
You're absolutely right. What Big Pharma wants to do is to make supplements and vitamins, in most cases, either written by a doctor for a prescription or to be banned as well, prohibiting you from using these to help yourself. I am a huge booster of alternative medicine. Huge. I think there are a lot of mainstream doctors out there who care about us and who are trying to do the best thing. But I got to tell you, 6 months ago I was in a doctor's office and I saw a representative for a pharmacy company standing at the window. I guess he had an appointment. And, I mean, they give the doctor some piece of literature that the company writes, has a PR company do it. And the doctor, in most cases, doesn't research it. He starts prescribing it. Now, here's something to make your toenails grow longer. Writes a prescription for it. I think it is very dangerous if in this country you're not allowed to go to the store and get vitamins and prescriptions. I see nothing wrong with regulating how they're made so we don't get junk from China that's laced with all kinds of stuff. But I do think you should have the right to do what you want. For example, part of my regimen that you know, you've heard the program, turmeric, and fish oil and all kinds of things. I take 80 supplements a day in some form or fashion. I am a human alternative medicine robot. Did you listen to April 1st program, by the way? How many listened to that one? All right, so you know what I'm talking about. But I am, and you're right, we'll do more shows like that as we get up to that date. I don't think anything's going to happen on that date, but they're going to try. Yes.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I hope that the WMAL will put it on for the 3 o'clock on to 5, because we in Washington, D.C. just love you. I heard last night that you are planning, is this correct, to write another book with Rosemary Ellen Guiley?
Yes.
This is wonderful.
There she is. Let's bring her the mic and she can explain what we're doing, because this was her original idea. After we had done a show on Frank's Box and Speaking to the Dead, she said, you know, you've done this with Bill Burns. Would you be interested in writing one with me? And I said, well, what do you need from me? And she said, all your guest material and your experiences and your stories that you've done, take it away.
Thank you, George. Well, George and I have done a number of shows on communicating with interdimensional entities. And I do a lot of original research in this field. I'm very interested in our ability to reach into other worlds for communication, especially via high tech. I've been working a lot with the Frank's Box technology and similar devices and getting some very interesting results. And we've played some of those clips on the show. So I thought that this would make a great topic for us to explore. Your audience is super interested. I know you're interested. And we've had lots of conversations about spirit communications. It's really the cutting edge in paranormal research right now. And it really extends across the board into the broad spectrum, including a lot of the topics that we're dealing about in conferences like this. Because it's not just about talking to the dead, it's about reaching into interdimensional areas to communicate with other entities, possibly extraterrestrials and ultra-terrestrials as well. So the implications of the research in this area are absolutely phenomenal. They touch all aspects of our society, the way we have a look at our worldviews, our cosmologies, our religions, our mythologies, our spiritual beliefs, and our personal beliefs about who we are and how we fit into the big scheme of things. So what George and I are going to do is we're going to push the edge on this, the boundaries on this. We're going to be talking to the people who are doing the frontier-oriented research, their results. We're going to be looking at the pros and cons, the light side and the dark side, and the ramifications and implications for all of us. And that affects everybody here today.
Talking to the dead.